This show is a legal advertisement, and it is intended to provide general information only. It is not intended to provide specific legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. You should not rely on general legal information instead of specific legal advice regarding your specific circumstances. Follow-up contact does not create an attorney-client relationship and does not constitute legal advice.
Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, our law firm is Bell and Pollack. We are injury attorneys, as you know, but for you, for this show, we bring the show to you to answer your questions, solve your problems on any legal subject. We have lines open, 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. In the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. Welcome to all of our stations and to all of our listeners. Don't forget about our website, championsofthepeople.com. Today we're talking about insurance coverages. Fascinating subject. You know, if you're a passenger in a car, you're a driver, if you're a passenger in the front seat, and there's an accident, what happens? If you're a passenger in the back seat, what happens? If it's your car, somebody else is driving your car, and you're the passenger, what happens? If you're driving somebody else's car, what insurance applies, and how, and why, and what's the case law? It becomes quite fascinating. It's like a domino effect. One thing leads to another. Let's break this down to simple components. Let's say you're a passenger in a car. You're driving with your best friend. It's your best friend's car. There's a crash. It's the other person's fault, not your best friend's fault. Of course, not your fault. You're a passenger. So it's the other person's fault, the at-fault party. So you're injured as a passenger. First, Brad, let's talk about medical bills. Medical bills. You're the passenger. You have medical bills. So we've talked for years about MedPay. So how does MedPay apply in that situation?
Well, and I want to start this with an understanding to everyone. We can tell you what normally should be the situation. Your policy may be different. So you sometimes, I would suggest every time, should sit down with your agent and ask them how the coverage applies and what happens under different scenarios. Make sure you have proper coverage and make sure you confirm that you understand in layman's terms, in regular, as Gary, you and I sometimes call it baby talk,
right,
exactly what the coverage is that you purchase from that insurance agent that you have. But under the situation you're talking about, we have a provision in all policies. It's by law, unless you waive it, and never waive it, you have the right to MedPay. MedPay starts out at $5,000. It's for every person in the car. It applies to every person, $5,000 each, not a total of $5,000, but $5,000 each for every person that's in the car that gets hurt. It pays for your injuries, and for that much of your injuries, for your medical damages up to the $5,000 limit, regardless of who caused the accident, regardless of fault. It doesn't matter.
Right. We used to have the no-fault law in Colorado. That sunsetted and went away several years back. And so now we're back to what this call in the law is called the original tort system. But they have a statutory exception called MedPay. Brad just covered it. So you're the passenger in the car. So you have medical bills. Let's say you've gone to the emergency room. You have medical bills. Can you then collect on the driver's MedPay provision? And can you then collect on your own MedPay car policy, even though you weren't driving?
Yes, you can. You can collect under both. And you've heard Gary and I talk many, many times that you should not waive that provision and, if at all possible, get more. Quite often, most insurance companies will offer at least $10,000. Most of them will go to $25,000. There are some insurance companies that will go to $50,000 of MedPay that they'll give you, or they won't give you, they'll sell you. It's not expensive insurance. It's not insurance that you want to give up. If you can get more, get higher coverage, to make sure you're covering all your deductibles, all your co-pays, all your other expenses, that you're getting this paid regardless of fault, that you're getting your injuries paid for, that you can go to a doctor without the concern or fear that you're not going to be able to pay the doctor, your medical care is going to be taken away from.
Right, but like in that example, you're the passenger, so you collect the med pay from the driver's insurance policy. You can collect the med pay from your own insurance policy. And when you recover for your injuries from the at-fault party's insurance company, when you recover that money, you do not have to pay the med pay people back. There's a statute that says they don't get paid back. That used to be different, but now you don't have to pay them back. So why wouldn't you get the med pay? Even if you're a passenger, if you're a driver, why wouldn't you get the med pay? And as Brad said, the statutory minimum is $5,000, but many times insurance companies offer more. I think they all offer more. Sometimes they have a cap. Some won't offer anything more than 25 grand, some 50 grand. And I've said before, my insurance company is USAA, and I asked them on the phone, what's the highest med pay you have available? They said 100 grand. I said, I'll take it. And it wasn't that expensive. I will take it. Because if somebody takes me out of my game plan, obviously I'm not going to be very happy about it, but I want my medical bills paid, and I want to be protected. Okay, Brad, let's switch gears a little bit. You're a passenger in a car. Let's say your driver, your friend was at fault. Your driver ran a red light and caused an entire crash. Can you recover against the driver? We're talking about insurance coverages here. We're talking about the different permutations that can happen and the maze that can happen so you can recover against your driver.
Okay, now remember, we've talked about the med pay. The med pay is regardless of fault, so it doesn't matter who's at fault. You have the right to the med pay. So your own driver, and by and large, follow this simple rule when you talk about what insurance is primary. The car insurance is primary, the insurance that goes with the car. So that, you know, you'd be looking at the driver, you'd be looking at the insurance that's with that car, you'd be looking for that med pay. Then you'd be looking at your own med pay. And then you'd also be looking at if the driver was negligent and caused your injuries, you can look to the driver's insurance for coverage. Now, that's a tough one. You've got to make sure you watch the policy, because a lot of policies will exclude from coverage resident relatives, or they'll exclude from coverage spouses. So you want to be careful on that, because sometimes you can't, and it's only by virtue of the policy specifically excluding you from being able to collect from the driver. But most of the time, if the driver's been negligent, and you know, then they'll get into contributory negligence for all the people out there who might be doing something that distracts the driver or takes their attention away or causes them not to be able to drive the way they should be. But for most of the time, you can look to the driver for responsibility.
Right. So you're the passenger, best friend's driving the car. So then if you're going to make a claim, you have to make a claim against your best friend's insurance company and potentially against your best friend. You may decide you don't want to do that. You may want to do that. It may be significant enough that you have to do that.
And let's make sure everybody understands. When you're making the claim, you are making it against your best friend.
Right.
And insurance companies rely on that quite often, that you're not going to sue your best friend. You're not going to come after your best friend. And quite often, best friends or people start thinking, well, I'm not your friend anymore because you're suing me. But the only way in Colorado you can go against that, you can get that insurance coverage to pay for your medical bills or pay for your losses, is by suing the person, because Colorado does not allow you to sue the insurance company directly.
Right. So, and if you have the right kind of attorneys, you wouldn't even file a lawsuit to begin with. You just try to settle the claim with the insurance company. So there would be no lawsuit. There would be no formal lawsuit, but there would be a claim with the driver's insurance company. And so this is the tip of the iceberg on how insurance coverages work. But Brad said an entire mouthful earlier at the top of the show, meaning you must always, always default to the policy, default to the language and terms of the policy. And then that's a whole area of the law itself as to who drafted the contract. You didn't have any input into drafting that contract. You didn't change the terms. You were presented with this contract. So under contract law, that contract's going to be strictly construed against the insurance company. So we're talking about coverages. And believe me, that's just the tip of the iceberg right there. So you have different permutations. Maybe you have a passenger in the back seat. Maybe you have a baby in a child seat. And maybe your driver was partially at fault and the other driver was partially at fault, the at-fault driver. So it changes the flavor of the entire situation. But you must follow the insurance proceeds and know where you're going. Okay, you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. You can call us anytime, 303-713-8255, 713-8255. We're here for you. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. You can call us on any legal subject. Even though we're injury attorneys, we answer your questions and solve your problems on any legal subject. 303-713-8255. We're here for you. If you want any of our books, they're free. You can call the studio right here, 713-8255. We'll send you a hard copy of our books. If you want them, you on the website, you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. championsofthepeople.com. You can download them for free, any copy of any of our books. We have 5 books out right now. Our most recent book called Legal Game Plan. You need your own legal game plan. You can get it for free. If you come to see us, we obviously give you your legal game plan. You need a strategy. You can't guess. You can't wonder. You can't just go through the maze and hope you get to the end of the maze through this insurance maze in a good fashion. Right now, we're going to talk to Steve from Denver. Good morning, Steve. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I have a tenant landlord situation.
Okay.
I have a tenant that gave us a bad check and also paid late. So give him a 3-day notice, and he said he's going to pay. He paid $1,500, and with the late fee and all that stuff, he said there yesterday that he's going to pay the rest of it, which is about $900. And I couldn't find them. Last night I stopped this evening. They were not home. Just when he paid me a $1,500, he said, oh, in 2 hours, my wife's going to come home and she's going to pay the rest of it.
Okay, so has he paid it yet?
Just the $1,500. What to do in a situation when he paid about more than half of the rent, and I have a 3-day notice from last week ago I gave him. Can I file a court paper with half paid?
All right, so your question is, he was going to pay the rent, he paid part of it, he didn't pay the other part of it. You gave the demand for payment of rent or possession, 3 days notice, correct?
Right,
Did you post it on the door?
Yes.
Okay, so then the answer is, yes, you can move forward with an action for eviction.
Oh, appreciate that, because I wasn't sure. You know, we've been in this for a while, and a little bit changed on the time.
Well, you know, and the caveat in our conversation here is it always depends on the terms of the lease, but 99.9% of the leases, you can then just go ahead and proceed with an action for eviction. And okay. To do that, you've got to sue them, and then you have to personally serve them.
Right.
With this,
all that stuff I know. I'm familiar with that. I just been run into lately the half paid and then stop paying the rest.
Well, also, there's one other thing. There's a statute in Colorado with regard to bad checks. And you can also send a notice to the tenant, and the notice says you have so many days to make the check good. And if they don't make it, you have to give them more than 3 days' notice. But if they don't make the payment within the time period, then you can get extra damages for the bad check, because it's a pretty punitive statute in Colorado with regard to bad checks.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so the problem is, if you give the notice for the bad check, you have to wait longer than the 3 days. And so that they're still in the premises. But you can still sue to evict them. It becomes a little bit complicated. But the answer to your question, yes, you can file an action. And many times, many, many times, they're not going to leave until they get sued in an order of eviction.
Yeah, and you want to make sure when you're collecting those payments, the partial payments, that you're making it clear to them that that's not going to stop the eviction proceedings. If they're making partial payments, you want to make clear, even when you're collecting the money, look, you owe the full amount, the 3-day demand for payment of rent or possession of premises requires that you pay the full amount of the rent, not partial payments, and you're not going to be giving them a payment plan or something else.
I understand. That's good. Thank you very much.
So did we answer your question, Steve?
Yes, sir. Very well.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling us.
Our pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us anytime at 303-713-8255. Don't forget about our blog. We have a blog every Sunday morning in the Denver Post. It's called Auto Legal Talk. Tomorrow morning, we're talking about what we talked about on the top of the show insurance coverages and how do you find insurance and what covers what, who if somebody's driving your car. So that's our blog every Sunday morning in the Denver Post. It's right there. And we cover a different injury subject every Sunday morning. Jim is going to join us live now. Good morning, Jim. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I got a couple questions, and I don't know if you guys know much about this. Well, and the first one is on immigration. I don't know anybody particular, but I was thinking about wanting to sponsor somebody from like Japan to come to the United States.
Right.
And do you have any ideas of how a person would go about that?
You want to sponsor somebody, a family or one individual person?
Oh, probably just an individual person, and I'll tell you why.
Okay,
is the reason why is, I met this gal, where I work, and she's a young person, and we were just talking about Japan and everything.
Right.
And she was talking about how, because I was just so curious, you know, with Japan being so small, but yet they got like a gazillion people in a small space. And, you know, she was telling me about how Japan has literally the highest suicide rate in the world for young people.
Wow, I didn't know that. But is it what she's saying is because of the living conditions, that sort of thing?
Now say that again.
Was your friend saying it's because of the living conditions in Japan?
Oh well, you know what? She couldn't really say for sure exactly why all the reasons were.
Okay.
I know personally myself, if I had to live in like, I hear Tokyo's got like somewhere between 30 and 40 million people.
Right.
And I'm like, my God, if I had to live in a place like that, I think I'd be pretty depressed myself.
Right.
I've
had some friends that lived in New Zealand. They say they go to Japan and they sleep on the floor sometimes, they told me, of where they're staying. Because of what you're describing. So, you know, as far as you sponsoring somebody, I think they can come as a kickoff. They can come, they could come visit you. But I think you don't know somebody. You're just wondering about a person, a stranger in Japan.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could probably find a way. I mean, I could probably talk to this gal and see if she's got, you know, friends or whatever over there that she might know that might want to come over to the United States and be sponsored to come over. You know, I could probably do that. I was just kind of wondering if you knew how hard it would be for a person to do that, or can a person just up out of the blue sit there and go to the government with a name of somebody they might have met through another person to sponsor them, to bring them to the United States.
Yeah, you have to, you know, the first thing you need to do is go through the Immigration Bureau here in Colorado, and we can hook you up with that information. And the question is, are you sponsoring them to come live here? Are you sponsoring them? Normally, they're sponsored on work visas or on work permits. And it doesn't sound like you're talking about wanting to get them sponsored on work permit or visas. So the next thing is it a tourist situation? Or are you sponsoring them to come to Colorado to eventually be citizens? The visa requirements are pretty easy as far as Japan. They just have to get a visa to come into our country, a passport, and to be able to be here. But then the question is, what are they here for? And,
right.
You know, the question is, when you're saying you want to sponsor somebody or invite them here, you know, as Gary was asking, well, if they're just coming to visit, that's one thing. If they're coming to stay here, and you want them to be able to stay here, then the question is, what for? Are they going to be a work visa? Are they going to be working towards their citizenship? What's their involvement in our country?
Oh, okay. Well, let's just say that because the gal that I talked to, she came here originally as a student for school, for college.
Right. Right, there's an example. They can come here for school as students, and you can sponsor them. Then be a sponsoring family where they're going to stay. They don't necessarily have to do that. They can get a visa to come into our state or into our country without that. Now, you know, I'm talking about basic principles of sponsorship or of somebody coming into our country. Obviously, our immigration rules seem to be quite fluid right now. So, what may be the rules in the future? are something we'll have to watch.
Well, breaking it down to its components, Jim, I think obviously just break it down the simple components. They can come here to visit, yes. Can they come here and then say apply for a visa for work? Yes, they can do that. So if you're going to, that would be a way to, quote, sponsor them. And so they get here and they're going to have a work visa. Then they can apply. So you've got those steps made. Then they can apply for citizenship and okay. that sort of thing. But I always go back to that very fascinating story to me is Larry Walker, who used to play for the Colorado Rockies, had his green card because he was from Canada. And so to keep it, one of the criteria is that you have to prove that you have skills nobody else has. And I've sure. I've seen this work in reverse with photographers of sports shows going to Canada to fishing lodges, and they've got to prove they have a skill, et cetera, et cetera. And I've seen them get hung up at customs on that. But then Larry Walker had to go down, and obviously he had skills nobody else had. And so that's kind of a general picture, but you do this in a step-by-step process. They can come to visit. They can get a work visa. They can get a visa for other purposes. And they do not and should not violate the terms of the visa, but then they can apply for citizenship if that's what they want to do. And then that way you're kind of sponsoring them. Am I making sense to you?
And you can be a financial sponsor, too. It depends on what they're coming for and what they're going to do here. If they're going to just be living here, then you might have to financially sponsor them. And for that, that's a different form. It's a form I-130 and a form I-864A. But there's different reasons. If you get further on that, I'd be happy to help you get that figured out.
Hey, Jim, we got to go to break. So why don't I put you on hold, give Kevin your information, okay. And we'll give you a call and see if we can help you further. Would that be okay?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds great.
All right, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are injury attorneys in our day lives, but this show is for you, 303-713-8255, because we are your champions of the people. Good morning. Welcome back. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. You can call us anytime at 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. We're not going to have Eric from Caitlin's on this morning. They're slammed over there, we've told, and they can't get to the phone, so it must be a good problem. But it is a problem. But don't forget about Caitlin's. They've got their decks. They got the umbrellas. They've got it's a beautiful deck. They've got their big screen TVs. They got the lunch specials. They got the breakfast specials. They got homemade from scratch, homemade red chili sauce, green chili sauce, and the green chili sauce has no pork in it. And they've got all kinds of egg dishes. It's a breakfast lunch place. It's a good place to go. And if you go over there, tell Eric hello from us. It's located in Glendale. And so it's easy to find. You can Google it, and it's right across the street, basically, from what I used to call the Darth Vader Hotel, the big one, the black one there on Colorado Boulevard. So you can go to Caitlin's and find them. Okay, so today we're talking a little bit about insurance coverage, and we have an auto injury blog in the Denver Post that airs tomorrow. I mean, it doesn't air. I'm sorry. It's published tomorrow morning. It's published every Sunday, and we try to give you educational information about a different legal injury subject, just like our injury shows. We do many injury shows. So we're talking about insurance coverage and car insurance coverage. And, of course, you know, you get the policy. I doubt if anybody really reads the policies. But there's a couple of things you need to home in on, and one of which is obviously the limits of your coverage. We always preach that. We were preaching about MedPay coverage and the limits and who gets MedPay. But we were using the example, if you're injured in a car, you're a passenger. If your passenger is a back seat passenger and you don't have your seat belt on, then legally that's okay. It's probably not okay for your safety, but it's okay because it cannot be used against you if you don't have your seat belt on in the back seat. But as a passenger, let's say your driver was at fault, it's your friend. You're all out doing something, and it's your friend, and they were at fault, so you can make a claim. You don't have to, but if you're going to be injured, some people get so mad, and some people come and talk to us, and they say, you know, I don't want to make a claim. This is my friend. I'm not going to make a claim. I don't even want you to make a claim against the insurance company of my friend because we're all friends. And we've had people come back to us 5 months later and say, wait a minute, my neck problem isn't going away. My doctor says I have to have neck surgery. What is it that I can do? So, yes, you can make a claim against the insurance company. It's against your friend's insurance company if they were driving the car and if they were at fault. And so that's what you have to do. You don't have to just file a lawsuit. I think a lot of people, Brad, think, I have to sue my friend driver. No, not really, because you can try to resolve and settle the case with the insurance company.
Right. If they're dealing with it correctly, and you know what's going to happen to begin with is the lawyer or your representative, and the lawyer is going to call up the driver and say, who's your insurance company? Or they're going to tell you, go find out who the driver's insurance company was. And they're going to get in touch with the insurance company. They're going to tell the adjuster that my client's been hurt. I need to make some recovery. I need to know the limits of the policy. If you have a decent adjuster and a good insurance company, they're going to say, here's the limits. Here's what's available. And let's talk about what the injuries are and try and do a fair result. You do have some adjusters who will try to cause problems. And they start it with saying, we won't tell you how much the coverage is. We won't tell you what's available. We're going to tell the driver that you want to sue them, or you're trying to get money from them, or you're trying to get money from their friend. And what they do is they try to divide a wedge there or put a wedge there. Other times the adjusters will call up their insured and they'll say, see if you can find out information about how really injured your passenger was, or what the problems the passenger has, or if you can find out information and feed it to me rather than dealing directly with the attorney.
Yeah, and you can put a stop to some of this, and many times you can put an absolute stop to it. There are solutions. You need a legal game plan, a strategy, and we have preached so many times in this example we're giving you and other examples, the insurance companies all have their own strategies. And we've had people tell us, and there's myths in this business. Myths, I've been injured, surely somebody's going to take care of me. I've been injured, and it wasn't my fault, and surely somebody's going to pay me for my medical bills. And surely they're going to try not to. You need to understand that. We put it in our books. You can have our books for free. That's on our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are free. But the most recent two are the motorcycle injuries and motorcycle law in Colorado. What happens there, that's a different animal. And also legal game plan. And if you don't think these insurance companies don't have a legal game plan, you're wrong. They do. This is war. It is war. They want to beat you. They want to not pay these claims. And if they save, you do the math on this, it's kind of early in the morning, but if they save $10 on a million claims, what does that equal? Or $20 or $1,000 on all these claims. So that's their incentive. That's what they do. They say to you, they say that, you know, we don't do that. We don't look for profits. The claim center in an insurance company should not be a pure profit center, but that's how they drive it, and that's one way they try to drive it to save money. All right, Steve from Denver. Good morning, Steve. What can we do for you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a question. I was looking at this State Farm Mutual Auto Insurance versus Campbell. A 2003 case.
All right.
And the question is, it says that any punitive damages award more than 10 times the actual damages for an injury is presented excessive. And juries, here's the part I have a question on. Juries may not consider out-of-state wrongdoing when weighing companies' actions. And I guess they tossed out, the Supreme Court tossed out a $145 million award against State Farm for acting in bad faith by not settling claims against a policyholder involved in a fatal accident. So my question is, when they say juries may not consider out-of-state wrongdoing when weighing a company's actions, what does that mean in layman's terms?
Okay, a couple of things. Let me give you a background, then Brad's going to drill down further for you. But and we cover this on our injury shows on the air on other stations, and so it's a great question. So a few years back, the insurance companies, through their lobbyists, lobbied to have punitive damages capped, and meaning there's a statute. It didn't used to be the statute, and there's a statute now that says the punitive damages are capped. And I always say that they don't trust the jurors because they don't want to have a runaway jury, as they call it. They don't want to have a jury imposing large punitive damages, even though in certain instances it's absolutely egregious and they should be imposed. So a statute was passed through very intensive lobbying efforts to make a cap, and the cap is 1-to-1. What does that mean? That means that if the jury awards you damages, let's make up a number, of $400,000, and so it's 1-to-1. The punitive damages, generally speaking, there are a couple of exceptions, can be no larger than the compensatory damages of $400,000. So let's say the jury enters a verdict of $400,000, and they're really mad at this company, and they enter a $20 million punitive damages award. Well, when the jury leaves, and by the way, folks, you are the jurors. So you think you're doing the right thing, but when you leave, the defense lawyer who's paid for by the insurance company makes a motion to the court to reduce the punitive damages down to a one-to-one relationship with the compensatories. So the millions of dollars of punitives go down to $400,000 in that example.
Now, with respect to insurance companies have quite often tried to limit their damages. We now have certain claims against insurance companies that are founded under the bad faith claims of the insurance company not properly addressing or carrying out or investigating your claim and not timely paying it. There's a number of different things an insurance company can do wrong when they're not dealing with your claim here in Colorado. And for that, we can get double the amount of damages, or three times the amount, by simply proving that there's been bad faith exercised by the insurance company. When I say simply proving, it's not as easy as it sounds, but you've got to show that the insurance company violated certain practices and standards when adjusting your claim. And when they violate those practices and standards, then you can go in and get the covered amount plus two times the covered amount.
It's a fascinating area of the law, Steve, because people don't get it. They don't understand that when there's an accident, a crash, let's say you're the at-fault party. You're the one that was guilty. And in the Campbell case, he was passing several cars on a two-lane highway, et cetera, several. And so let's say you're guilty. And you're at fault, and you tell your insurance company, I don't want to be sued, settle this case. The decision is not yours any longer. It is the insurance company's decision. They decide everything. They decide if they're going to pay within your policy limits. Let's say your policy limits were $100,000, and they could have settled your case for the $100,000 or $90,000 within the policy limits, but they don't do it. You want them to do it, but they won't do it. They don't think they have to. They're not going to pay. And so now, since they wouldn't pay, you go to trial, and now a judgment, verdict and judgment is entered against you. Let's make up another number of $500,000. The insurance company had the ability to get you out of this situation by paying your policy, which you paid for, but they wouldn't do it. Then what the insurance company says, well, the verdict's higher than the policy that we have for you, Steve, and so we're not going to pay the extra $400,000. We're just going to pay the $100,000, and it's up to you. Now, Steve, can you stick with us during the break a second?
Yes, I can.
Okay, because this is a very fascinating area of the law, because I hope everybody got that example. The insurance company makes all the decisions. The insurance company hires a lawyer, which the jury doesn't even know the insurance company's there, or pays for this. They hire a lawyer, and if an excess verdict enters against you, in that example, $500,000, what happens? We'll cover that right after the break. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us 303-713-8255. We're ready to talk law with you. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. And don't forget about the show that follows our show, the Consumer Real Estate Show. Emphasis on the word consumer. You know, they have two shows. One show you can call in and ask questions. And they're very professional. We've worked with these guys before, Larry and Barry. So you don't want to miss their show. And I've always said they're very intricate, involved, detailed questions with regard to real estate. Sometimes brokers' duties and obligations, sometimes the transaction, sometimes inspections, sometimes HVACs, and sometimes there's an issue of concealing a defect, a latent or patent defect on the property, and what happens then. They can help you. Right before the break, we were talking to Steve. Are you still with us, Steve?
Yes, I'm still with
you. Okay, so Brad's got a couple of input for you, but here, the example I gave you was the insurance company didn't solve your problem, didn't settle your case. You were the insured in this example. You wanted them to settle it, but you don't have the decision-making ability. Then you go to trial, and they get an excess verdict over the amount of your insurance. You had a $100,000 policy in this example, and now State Farm or the insurance company says we don't want to pay. And so, Brad, what about that?
Steve, to answer your question, what the Supreme Court considered, and it's long been you brought up a fascinating question, because it goes back to the origination of our Constitution. It's states' rights versus federalism. And what's the federal and what's the country's interest or the federal interest in implying or imposing a penalty against somebody versus states' rights? Punitive damages are considered to be a civil remedy for, in essence, an inappropriate conduct that is reprehensible and can border on what a lot of times they'll make criminal conduct, or they'll have a criminal penalty or a statutory penalty. But because there's no statutory penalty, you look and you see if the defendant's actions, this State Farm's, are so reprehensible that not only should the plaintiff be compensated for their losses, but punitive damages should be assessed against State Farm or the reprehensible party. When State Farm's a reprehensible party, they then say, how do we determine the amounts and what we should be looking at? What the Supreme Court said is in that case, they looked at State Farm's actions across the country in what they were doing in other states when dealing with these type of claims and when adjusting these type of claims. And what the Supreme Court said is there's got to be a limitation of that, because if you start doing that, you don't know to what extent State Farm's actions in other states meet or comply with the legal requirements of that state versus how they meet with your state. So something that could be reprehensible in Colorado and a reprehensible practice that State Farm's carrying out in Colorado that should lead to punitive damages may not be as reprehensible in Louisiana or in Texas. Right. So what they said is that the punitive damages are there to serve a state interest of having people operate or act in their business relationships or in their personal relationships appropriately within this state. And the state can decide how they want people to act and treat each other in business relationships. And if you start dragging in other states, they're saying you're going beyond what the due process clause provides, because the due process clause says, although you can punish people, it has to be appropriate punishment.
The fascinating part about the State Farm Campbell case, Steve, I'm so glad, this is a great question, because the fascinating part is, how did this case get to the United States Supreme Court? This was an accident case, a car accident case, I believe in Utah. How did it get to the United States Supreme Court? Well, they had the punitive damages were in the millions, and I think there was a punitive damage award of $145 million. And so it was an argument that we got to get to the Supreme Court because the United States Constitution, the United States Constitution, has a due process clause. And when you have punitive damages at large, that was the argument, that violates the due process clause. That's absolutely fascinating. Fascinating. I hope we're getting to your question.
And that due process is grossly excessive or arbitrary punishments. So that's what they're bringing up. Should the federal government step in on a state matter to determine that the excessive or arbitrary punishment is grossly excessive, and therefore it shouldn't be allowed as a federal practice or as a practice of our country?
So that's the 10 times the actual damage rule?
Well, that's why they brought up 10 times the actual damage. Now, in Colorado, we have much stricter. We're 1-to-1 that the court can make greater and do a 2-to-1 if the court finds clear and convincing proof to support the 2-to-1. But in Colorado, we're 1-to-1.
So you have different state laws concerning punitive damages. Some of them have caps, some of them don't. Colorado has a 1-to-1 cap. Okay, then this case went up to the United States Supreme Court, and the Campbell case invoked the due process clause of the United States Constitution that says that punitive damages award, this is fascinating, violates due process. And in the Campbell case, the United States Supreme Court sort of implied, lawyers call it dictum, it's sort of implied, they didn't really hold, but they said when you're getting to 4 times the amount of the compensatory damages, when you're getting to that area, it's starting to cross the line as to whether or not it's going to violate the due process clause. Absolutely fascinating case.
So State Farm is acting in bad faith because they refused to pay?
Right.
They're my insurance company.
Right.
If I get in an accident and it goes over my limits, then that person can come after me. And so how do I file against my own insurance company?
Okay, let's say that happens. You had a $100,000 policy and a verdict of $500,000 enters against you. And let's assume you're at fault, okay?
Okay.
All right, so then you say, wait a minute. I wanted this case settled. State Farm, in this example, you didn't settle it. And therefore, you have to pay the extra $400. And sometimes they issue comfort letters in advance that says we'll pay it. Sometimes they don't. And so then they say, well, we're not going to pay it. So then here come the lawyers, right? you have to go get an attorney to then file a claim for bad faith insurance practices against your own insurance company. In this example, that would be State Farm. Because you can't sometimes those insurance companies say, well, why don't you just go file bankruptcy, Steve? And then we're all good. Everybody's good, right? No, we're not good, right?
Except me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everybody's good except you, right?
And in Colorado, we have bad faith laws now. They're recent, or they're fairly recent in relationship to the to our legal system, and we've had to have those passed because we've had insurance companies who don't act in good faith, or they all do. They all have a problem from time to time because they misjudge a claim. One of the best things you can do if you get sued and you're and the claim against you is nearing or can exceed the limits that you have on your policy is get a lawyer to go make, or you make demand on the insurance company, you settle this case within the policy limits, or you promise me and give me what's called a comfort letter that you're going to pay any excess verdict. And so if a verdict comes back from the jury that's in excess of my coverage, you're going to pay it. Now, where that runs into a problem, Steve, is if you're also being sued for punitive damages. Because insurance companies cannot insure for punitive damages. They can't promise recovery for punitive damages. So now you're on the hook. So that's why you need a lawyer to insist the insurance company pay the pay.
Yeah, and one more thing before we go. We're coming up to a wall on time here. But listen, so you got sued in that example. You didn't want to be sued. You didn't even want to go to court. And what happened was you told your insurance company to settle it. But they hired an attorney to represent you. And who pays for that attorney to represent you? The insurance company does. In this example, State Farm. Mm-hmm. And so they say, the attorney says you're really their client, but they get paid by State Farm.
Let's talk about this next week.
Yeah,
Gary.
We got to go.
Talk.
Thanks
we're
for
gonna
the call.
We're going to talk about it next week.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. We'll see you next week.